When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 5, The Whomping Willow.
Oh, man.
Yeah. What I love is that the Whomping Willow plays almost no role in this particular book at all, and yet it gets an entire, like, chapter title and art and introduction, and you're just sort of like, yeah, the Whomping Willow, that's at Hogwarts. But it's like, it's actually much more of like a book three thing. Like, you don't learn the secret about the Whomping Willow until like a whole book later.
No, I feel the exact same way. And I think that if I were to be quizzed about which book this chapter exists within, like if somebody was like, you know, if we were doing Jay versus Ben and the question was like, you know, which book is the Whomping Willow in, I would be like, Prisoner of Azkaban. Like, right, yeah. Obviously, the one where it's relevant.
Yeah.
The kind of ironic thing with that particular note in mind is it's like a very slow play setup for a huge plot point one full year later. In the meantime, though, I think the overall, like, inclusion and way that the Ford Anglia is set up in this story is very well done.
Dude, I kept writing it down. It was just like, this chapter, more than anyone, like, really made me appreciate so much, like, how everything in this story is so well connected. Like, every action leads to like another consequence, which like informs the next thing, which is the next thing. Because like, there's a point in this book that for a very long time I always just sort of felt like it was like a Deus Ex Machina situation, like when the Ford Anglia shows up to save Ron and Harry from the spiders.
Yeah.
Like, it always just felt like, oh, that's convenient. Like, oh, this is the whole reason the car was written in. And it's like, no, that is not the case. Like, it is all very serendipitous. The reason Harry and Ron and Aragog and the Anglia are in the woods at the same time is like, it is, they are all there because 50 years ago, Tom Riddle opened the Chamber of Secrets. Like, it is all connected in, like, none of them are aware of that in the moment, but like, that decision 50 years ago is the reason these three entities are now together in the forest at the same time. And it's like, it's not an accident. Like, they're all there because of each other.
Yeah. I mean, down to the fact that the very reason they can't get through the barricade at platform 9 3/4 is because the House Elf Dobby is, of course, preventing Ron and Harry from having their access to it. And so that leads them to the flying of the car.
Right.
You know, which leads them to the Whomping Willow and then the like wildification of the vehicle itself.
Even the boldness to drive the car comes from the fact, again, that Dobby was blocking the letters and got Harry locked in his room, which is like, so Ron and Fred and George were like, well, let's fly the car. Let's do it. And it's like, if they hadn't done that, Ron wouldn't have suggested, like, let's do it again by ourselves, you know? But it's like, because they already did it, now they feel comfortable doing it. And so it's like, and it's still down to Dobby, which means it's still down to the diary, which means it's still down to the chamber.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
And it's like, Aragog's in the woods because of the chamber.
Right. Yes. Because that is the creature that supposedly Tom Riddle framed Hagrid for releasing on the school so many years prior. So Yeah, no, it's really neat. Yeah, like I because I was having the exact same sensation. I was like, man, this is, I mean, there's the idea of like Chekhov's gun, which is sort of like, you know, if you're going to introduce a gun into a scene, then like by the third act or whatever, the gun needs to have been fired. Right. And so it's sort of like, I feel like the Ford Anglia is one of these things where it's like, it's not just a plot device that is dropped in front of us. It's sort of like every reason why it seems to be relevant keeps like it all just sort of like folds into itself and has been like perfectly melded together. So yeah. it just works. And so it was interesting to me though, that you caught that same thing.
I did. I mean, I have like little like circles of arrows drawn all over the place. Like this is all connected. It's all connected. It's such good. I mean, even if you want to say like you put like a smoking gun, you put a gun on stage, it's like Chekhov's Whomping Willow here too. It's like,
yes, yeah.
Put a fighting tree in there. It better be there for some reason. And it's like, oh, it will be, but definitely by the third act. Don't worry. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It'll come back.
What's also cool about the Whomping Willow is that if you look at like the maps that were drawn like before the first book was written, like it's on the maps.
So it's always been intended to be there.
Even if you don't hear about it in the first book too, now, which is kind of fun.
The big question that and this was another thing I highlighted a few times where I'd be questioning whether or not the continuity was quite as firm is on numerous occasions they refer to the Whomping Willow throughout this chapter as being like the very old, the ancient Whomping Willow. And it's like this willow was specifically planted for Remus Lupin upon his arrival to school as a way to disguise the secret passageway to the Shrieking Shack. So it's like those, I mean, even like Snape himself, although the little Freudian slip there of Snake himself, didn't mean to though. But either way, like Snape himself at this point in time, I think is only like 38 years old.
Right.
And so the tree is like 27, 25 years old. It's like by tree standards, that is not ancient or old.
It is not ancient or old. It is, I suppose, possible that the tree was like transplanted there.
Yeah, so I've had that thought too.
It could be ancient and was just moved from a place where it has stood for 100 years to Hogwarts instead.
What do you suppose would happen if you made either a broomstick or a wand from wood from the Whomping Willow?
Oh, that is such a great idea.
Right? Wouldn't that be so cool?
Well, okay, but so then bow truckles are supposed to live in trees of like wand wood quality.
Yes, correct.
Right, yep. So it's like, I wonder if they would ever live in a Whomping Willow or if like Whomping Willow wood would not make a good wand. But I suppose whether or not it makes a good wand doesn't mean you couldn't make a wand out of it.
That's a good point too. Yeah. I mean, but on the flip side though, is that most trees are not inherently magical and the Whomping Willow is.
That is also true. Like most trees are not inherently magical and yet their wood is used for wands. The Whomping Willow is like a magical tree. So you could have a magical wood, a magical core, and yeah, that could be very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, dude, I would love to see a Whomping Willow wand because you can make trees out of willow.
You can make wands out of willow.
Of course you can make trees out of willows. Yeah.
Or willows are made out of trees. Which way does that go?
Anyway, willows are just real trees.
They are indeed.
But yeah, so that'd be a very interesting, like a very angry, like could you hit people with the wand? Would it be like huge or?
Or would it even be like, you know, they refer to the flexibility of the wands quite often. Like, you know, like I think Bellatrix is like unyielding or something like that. Like it's like very, very rigid. Whereas like, I don't know, like Cedric's is maybe like swishy or something like that.
Yeah.
That'd be like a curious thing too if it'd be like a very, very bendy wand. Because like a willow switch is pretty bendy.
Bendy wands. Like could there be like I always imagine wands as just basically being like straight sticks.
Sticks, yeah.
Yeah. But like I suppose it's possible that you could have like a longer, like if, you know, if you had like a longer wand, it could have like a real like bow to it, almost like a fishing rod or something. You know, you're casting a spell, you could really be like whoosh, you know, like whipping
right. Like adding a little extra velocity there.
Right. Yeah. Like imagine how much harder aiming would be.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you guys could just point your wand at something. Mine's got like a droop, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, it reminds me when we were kids, we had a crab apple tree in our backyard we would go out there and like, we like, you know, cut off branches or whatever from like, you know, the nearby woods and you would sharpen an edge, put the crab apples on the end and then huck those things.
Oh, man,
and
I mean, whip them.
It was unbelievable. I mean, you know, as like a 7-year-old, you could easily send one of these sailing like 50 plus yards, yeah, if not awesome. Way further. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was like, yeah. Oh my gosh, it was like the most remarkable thing. So, but now I'm imagining every time we whipped one of those apples, if that was sort of like the complexity of directing a spell,
yeah,
you know, and it was like, I couldn't have directed the apple where I wanted it to go. All I was doing was just heaving the stick as far as I could,
right,
or as hard as I could. So like, imagine trying to actually like directionalize that. And right, then yeah, if that was as difficult as magic actually was.
Hopefully you just get good at it.
Hopefully. Know? Yeah. 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 Over time. I'll flick of the wrist.
Yeah.
Any which way, we can actually talk about the chapter now.
We could talk about, well, yeah, yeah, we could talk about it here. So I love the very first sentence of the chapter where just this, the end of the summer vacation came too quickly for Harry's liking, because like that, just that one sentence is like, that has never been true before.
He, yeah, know? That's the first time he has ever experienced, because this is another one of those weird things that was like hard to comprehend as a kid, is like, you as a child going home for summer break, like that was the best time of your life.
Yes.
Like there was nothing better than like, you know, 2 months, 2.5 months of no school.
Right.
And for Harry, it's been the opposite. He's like, I cannot wait to get out of this house and go back to school. And so for him to actually get to like enjoy it and be like, oh man, school right school, around the corner.
I know. Wow. Like I love school. Of course, it's the best place in the entire world, but maybe this place is just a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's that.
So nice. I love that. And then, okay, I wanted to get your opinion on something here on like the second paragraph where they're talking about, it says, on the last evening, Mrs. Weasley conjured up a sumptuous dinner that included all of Harry's favorite things, ending with a mouth-watering treacle pudding. So I think like treacle pudding is like a known Harry Potter, like his like favorite dessert, right? Is that a thing?
Or like treacle tart,
treacle
maybe?
Tart. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I don't know enough about treacle or whatever, if that's a flavor or a texture or a kind of cake.
You know, and it's funny to me as well, because I think like when I think of treacle, I like what my mind goes to is almost like hardened, not quite toffee, but what is the other? I feel like there's another like caramelized
nougat or something.
No, not nougat, more like crunchier than that, like a brittle.
Yeah.
You know, like a peanut brittle.
This says treacle is any uncrystallized syrup made during the refining of sugar. The most common form is treacle. Of treacle are golden syrup, a pale variety, and black treacle. And it's just basically just like molasses, but it's like syrup.
Oh, it's like syrup. Yeah. Okay. I see. And here I was thinking like of a rigidity to it.
Yeah,
like,
me
like,
too.
Like treacly.
Maybe it's more of a flavor. And this is another thing where they say pudding, and like, and my American brain is like, yeah, pudding, like Jell-O pudding.
Right, right. Like too thick to be soup, but right, definitely not a solid.
Right. So it's like, even when they say treacle pudding, it could mean treacle tart. But my question is, is this dinner the reason it becomes his favorite thing?
I could totally see that. Yeah, especially if on some level, like, because I think treacle tart is one of the things that Harry eventually smells in the Amortentia potion.
Is it?
Yes.
That's amazing.
I think it is. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's because it's very much one of those like there's no place like home kind of things. It's like you can go out in the wide world and try 5-star restaurants and it's somehow it's never better than mom's cooking. And it's just like,
yes,
is this that for him?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, actually you had to say mom, and then it always kills me. I mean, I know I've talked about it before, but the relationship between Harry and Mrs. Weasley just absolutely like both warms and so breaks good. My heart at the same time, mm-hmm, in the best possible ways. So anyway, but yes, so it sounds like what is otherwise just a really great evening. Another one of these instances where it's like, I mean, it's just so obvious that like, if you want to call the Weasleys poor, it's just purely in the things that don't matter, because otherwise it sounds like they just have like a really happy, full, warm household.
Right. It's like, this sounds like just the best evening ever.
Yes, it does indeed.
Yes.
Going on to the next page though, I think that we're getting ready for leaving the burrow and making our way to platform 9 3/4.
I love the description of how everyone's getting ready. And it's like, even though everyone seemed ready the night before, like no one was ready at all the morning of. And it's like, that is just so the way of it.
It totally is. This gets me every single time. Like I so often will find myself like just this past weekend, you and I and our younger brother Tyler were going on a ski weekend. And it was the type of thing where we were leaving Friday after work and it was Thursday evening. And I was just so tired from like the day, you know, that I had and actually wasn't feeling well last week. And so it's like, you know, I'm it's like Thursday night at 9 o'clock. I haven't packed. I'm like, you know, the right thing for me to do right now is to go to bed. I'll wake up early and I'll put all my stuff in the truck tomorrow
exactly.
morning. It'll be fine. And it was like the worst decision ever. So then you wake up and you're like, where are my socks?
I actually did the same thing. I have like normally when I take Luke to school in the morning, I have to drop him off at like 7:30.
Okay.
And then typically I go to the gym at like 7:45, but it's only 2 days a week. And so the other 3 days of the week, I normally just go to work and have like an extra hour of just like alone time at the office.
Oh, not so bad.
So on this particular occasion, I was like, I'm going to use that hour. I'm going to go home and pack during that time. And nice. It just worked out very nicely.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's not how this is supposed to go. You're supposed to be missing socks and stuff.
I know. Well, you know.
Or possibly almost breaking your neck, tripping over a stray chicken.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. Almost broke his neck. My goodness.
Which is something that happens to yes. Mr. Weasley.
There is a bit of, there was like some almost uncharacteristic or maybe just sort of like wizard muggle naivety that happens on the next page where Molly's like, muggles do know more than we give them credit for, don't they?
I think she's making reference here to the fact that they're getting inside of the car. Mr. Weasley has clearly magically enhanced it so that it can fit this massive group of people that is traveling. Yes. And they're all able to get into the back seat of the car and just be completely comfortable, like hip to hip. And this is Harry, Ron, Fred, George, and Percy all sitting comfortably side by side.
Right.
You know, so it's like, this is one of those things where it is kind of funny to me that this is almost like I was trying to figure out if it's like a kind of like wizard privilege or something where it's like she is so like, you know, she looks at the car from the outside then gets on the inside, she's like, wow, it's way bigger than you'd expect, you know, and it's like well, no, it's not.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, but yeah. Like it doesn't even occur to her to kind of like do the math and be like, how could it be this big inside?
It is, I guess there is, okay, I guess maybe there is more of like a benefit to the doubt kind of situation here where it's like her assumption is that muggles are smarter than she gives them credit for rather than it's been magically enhanced.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That was sort of my takeaway as well.
Yeah. But like it is also almost surprising to me that she doesn't realize it's magically enhanced.
That's the thing. Yeah, it seems like it should be obvious, but that's again what I mean, where it's almost like if you've lived in a world of magic for so long, take Hermione's beaded bag, for example. Like, you know, we see it as this like really like remarkable thing, but if you live in the wizarding world and you've got like a sock drawer that you can, I'm stuck on socks today, but a sock drawer you can open up that can hold like 4,000 socks or something,
right.
Then like maybe you just like, it never occurs to you the ways in which you're benefiting from magic.
Yeah.
Is sort of what I'm trying to say.
Right, like if all interior space is always just like way bigger than it's always supposed to be, maybe you lose concept of like what interior space is supposed to be.
Yes, exactly. Right, yeah. So it's like, because even the borough itself never, I mean, there's a lot of people sort of like living inside of this residence and it never seems to be like people are completely on top of each other either.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe that could be a part of what's going on. Then we get a sequence here and I think it's pretty well written because there's a myriad of just total like, of course, high school aged people have forgotten little things and then remember the little things. And it's all part of the calamity that is also setting up like the reason why
why they're so late and why it's all so rushed when we get to the platform.
Exactly. But this is the exact type of thing you could totally imagine where like, you know, somebody leaves the house. And I mean, this happens with my daughter Addison all the time where we're like pulling down our street and she's like, I need an Ono, which is like what we call her like little comfort blanket.
Yeah.
And we're like, you know, like I'll look at my wife Alice and be like, did you pack an Ono? And she's like,
No.
And it's like, all right, I'm turning around.
Yeah,
we can do it.
It is very clever because it looks like a series of events that looks like the reason you were told all of these things is to inform the lateness of the situation and like why they couldn't get through the barrier and why the timing was so important.
Yes.
There at the last second. But actually, there's also a very sneakily hidden, like enormous plot point in the innocuous list of things that makes them late.
Yes. So it starts with George forgotten his box of filibuster fireworks. 5 minutes after that, they skidded to a halt in the yard so that Fred could run in for his broomstick. They had almost reached the highway when Ginny shrieked that she'd left her diary.
Yes. And of course, the diary is enormously important. And it immediately makes you think like, well, what if she just actually forgotten it? You know?
I know.
How much of the book wouldn't have happened?
And this is another thing too, though. It's like almost certainly, I think Ginny has already met Tom Riddle.
Oh, yeah. Like, the reason she's like, you know, freaking out about it is because she's already started writing in it.
Yes. Yeah, so the allure has already like got its like hooks inside of Ginny.
But also, if you just back up to the first thing that it says, George had forgotten his box of filibuster fireworks. I'm like, I'm sorry. There's no mom on earth that would turn around to go get you your troublemaking supplies. Mom, hold on. I forgot to bring my fireworks to school.
No. Okay. But if we go to the next page, you know who might?
Who?
Arthur Weasley. So I'm starting to think that there is a possibility that Fred and George take after their dad more than any other of the Weasleys.
Do you think he was like a class clown? Like,
I don't know that he was a class clown, but I think his unfailing enthusiasm towards Muggle artifacts and like his tinkering rubs off on them in such a huge way, because they get in the car and Mr. Weasley, he's like, oh my gosh, we're running late. And he says, Molly dear, no, Arthur, no one would see. This little button right here is an invisibility booster I installed. That'd get us up in the air. Then we'd fly above the clouds. We'd be there in 10 minutes and no one would be any wiser. It's like, this is such Fred and George diet light calorie free thinking.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's just a little bit of like lighthearted rule breaking. It's like, we're not actually out to like cause harm or right. to like point, you know, this, like, you know, I mean, he's in the misuse of Muggle artifacts department.
Right.
And this is a misuse of Muggle artifacts.
Yes.
He's breaking his own laws in the process. But the other thing is that this specific function that he has here is the invisibility booster, which immediately had me thinking about the vanishing head hats that Fred and George eventually create.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Is there any possibility that they are like using the same spell that Arthur used on the Ford Anglia? Like, because it's something that Hermione again remarks at like the brilliance of.
Yeah. I think it's a disillusionment charm that they're able to like extend past the object.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it is. But like,
she's like, that's very tricky magic.
Right. Yeah. Right. But so I wonder if any way, I mean, we sort of made the mention of like eventually how they'll have like the Muggle playing cards, you know, Weasley's Wizard Wheezes. Like I think maybe there's some possibility that like, the boys just sort of can't help themselves, but they're directing it more towards like at causing laughs, whereas like Arthur's coming more from a place of like just utter fascination.
Right, sure. I can see it. Yeah. It does. There is some like, yeah, like taking after dad kindness there, but then they're just a bunch of jokester at the same time. So
yes, that's true. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
All right. All right. Well, let's see. So then after we finally get all the stuff, we remember everything. They arrive at King's Cross Station and everyone is in such a hurry to get to the platform that this is like one of those things, like when you're reading it, you don't think that much of it, but like the order in which they go through, like, doesn't really make that much sense to me. It's like, it's clearly written in a way so that Harry and Ron are able to get stranded, but it's like, what if Harry and Ron had just gone through first? Like, would Dobby have still stopped them, or would it be like oh man wait now we're all stuck? But it doesn't matter because Harry didn't go.
Yes, this whole sequence is very similar. It reminds me a lot of like the opening sequence to the movie Home Alone.
Yeah,
where it's definitely like, okay, we need everybody to be like tight enough on time, you know, we need everybody to be bustling.
Very Home Alone.
Yes, it's sort of like, it's like, ah, that's how this could happen, because right, because
the urgency.
Yes, precisely. But you're definitely right. There's no doubt about it. It's like Percy going first is like kind of like a like an unusual call. Like, it almost seems like Ginny and you know, Mr. and Mrs. Weasley would go first, as like, you know, it's like her.
Yeah, you know. Or it would seem like that one of the parents would stay back to make sure everyone got through. Or,
yes, right. Yeah, yeah. Or that. Yeah,
or like even of. That like Mrs. Weasley goes through the platform with Ginny. It's like she didn't go through with Ron, you know, like on his first year. Like, I mean, I guess she had Ginny with her still, but
that's a good point,
you know,
as well.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But like they just sort of leave Harry and Ron back there, and of course they get blocked by Dobby, and now they immediately freak out, like, what are we gonna do? Let's see what else did I write down here. Dobby is there. Well, how often is Dobby? This is the other thing, is that Dobby is there. Like, how often is Dobby watching Harry? You know, like he's at King's Cross Station.
Yeah, no, he is. It's a really good question. Like, I mean, again, I kind of go back to like the whatever commands Lucius was giving that may be permitting this. Like, on the one hand, I think at some point in time, Harry asks Creature to keep an eye on Draco Malfoy for me, would you? And like, he doesn't specify that there is ever a time to stop. And
right.
So like, I think a week later, Creature shows up and he's like, he hasn't slept for a week because he's like, I've been keeping an eye on the Malfoy boy,
right.
You know, as per your request. And it's sort of like, oh goodness gracious, I didn't tell you to sleep, did I? Oh my gosh.
Yes.
You know, so it's like, you almost wonder if maybe on some level, like back at Malfoy Manor, Lucius is like, now Draco, keep an eye on that Potter boy, would you? And Dobby's sort of like, okay, I stepped in that conversation at keep an eye on that Potter boy, would you?
Yeah, right.
Like, that's his bending of the rules. And it's like,
I suppose you could like surmise that none of the Malfoys are home right now either, because they're all at this exact place dropping Draco off for school.
Also true. Yeah, also so true.
Like maybe
yeah.
Dobby can just be like, well, see you.
right. Yeah. Yep. That's another good point. So, but I mean, as per always, like, I think that I would extend so much credit to the power of elf magic that they're just capable of doing a lot of stuff. Pretty powerful. But it would be something to look for to see whether or not Lucius is in attendance at the game during the Rogue Bludger.
Right. Because I think in the book he is.
If in the book he is, then it stands to reason that possibly Dobby just goes with them to King's Cross Station to see Draco off to school. So, I mean, you know, because
maybe they just bring him with him.
Yes, exactly. Them. Yeah. Yep.
That's true. Yeah. So, I never thought about how does Dobby get the bludger there.
I always just assumed that Dobby was just manipulating a bludger that was otherwise inside of the box.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's been my interpretation of it. But the next thing that sort of happens is this is another one of those where it's like it's a little bit of a leap in terms of like reasonable reaction for 2 12-year-olds. But basically, like, they're not able to get through. Ron looks around wildly and just immediately gets the conclusion of, we're going to miss the train. I don't understand why the gateway sealed itself. And this is like one of those, then like Harry looks up the clock and like all of a sudden we're counting down like 10 seconds, 9 seconds, you know, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 1 second. Yeah, wow, I did that wrong. 3, 2, 1, and it's gone. And this is like one of those things where, like, at this point in time, Arthur and Molly would certainly be like waving as the train pulls out and then immediately walking back through the platform.
As would so many other wizards, you know?
Yes. It's like the fact that they're like, hey, you know what? We should probably solve this before mom and dad get back.
Yeah. Like they're going to be mad at us.
Yeah. It's like, that's pretty unlikely, because otherwise the honest truth would just be like, we don't know what happened. We couldn't get through. Look at Hedwig. She's clearly upset. Like, we don't want to miss the train. We've all been hurrying all morning. Like, none of it would make sense that they were
were unable to pass through.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, this is one of those where, especially for me as a 12-year-old, like, I would still be at that age where it's like, when I have an issue, it's usually like, go ask an adult to solve it for you.
Yeah.
Not like, hey, let me try to solve this on my own so I'm not an inconvenience to anybody. I'll probably just steal their car. They won't care.
Right. They can just apparate. It's not going to be a big deal to them. They won't care that I stole the car because they'll understand I needed to get to school.
Right. Yeah.
So it is. I mean, it does feel like a little bit of like a few leaps of, not leaps of faith, but a suspension of disbelief, maybe. Just like, yeah, we're flying the car. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Before that, just one quick note that there was, I just found this to be like an interesting little line is so they're kind of like, oh no, what are we gonna do? Harry, do you have any muggle money? And Harry with a hollow laugh says, the Dursleys haven't given me pocket money for about 6 years. And so it's like, you know, Harry's 12 here, which means that apparently they did give him pocket money when he was 6. And I was like, I wonder what was going on that year. I wonder if they're like, we're having like a little pang of guilt or something. Like, like, all right, we're doing it this time.
Right.
You know?
I mean, I suppose this is September 1st. So like it's like almost exactly 1 month after Harry's birthday. So maybe he got like some pocket money for his 6th birthday or something.
That's exactly it. Yeah. For some reason. Or do we actually see him receive like a 50 cent piece?
Yeah, I guess so.
At some point, which is, I mean, technically pocket money.
Right. Also, they can't like figure out like, oh, they talk about money, but it's like they are in London. So like they could still conceivably go to like Diagon Alley. Like Harry knows how to get in.
That's also true.
Leaky Cauldron, yep. You know, like they could return to the wizarding world in a different way, I guess, if they needed money, if that's their concern, where they could get to Gringotts or whatever. But anyway, they head back to the car where Ron unlocked the cavernous trunk with a series of taps from his wand, which just feels like underage magic.
It definitely does. It's like, is this Alohomora or is this like sometimes I wonder whether or not like magic can sort of like, it's like, we're not really casting a spell. We're not really like doing anything, but like, there's still a little bit more that you can do with your wand that doesn't qualify. Like, you know, it's kind of like when they do detention in the Forbidden Forest and it's like throwing up sparks.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, is Hagrid giving them authorization to like cast a specific spell, or is throwing up sparks just sort of something that like your wand can do? That's sort of like a fun party trick for the first 10 minutes you've got it, and then you realize that all of them do it, and it's like, well, it's only really useful like whenever you need it to do something. So in the meantime, so I wonder if there's like some like very like light magic that can always be done with the wand, but
I
like,
don't know, or if this is just spells. Like, well, it's the middle of London, so you know, we certainly detected that magic was done, but it's so much more likely to be an adult.
Yeah, that also tracks. Yeah, as far as the trace is concerned.
Yeah, yep. As far as the trace, it is so inconsistent and annoying.
I know.
But yeah, whatever, yeah. Whatever. I don't want to bring it up in every episode, but I probably will.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones. But one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although to be fair, it's not a concern either. But to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach designed for you to pick up the language naturally, so you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership. Because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast. But with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Through the Gryffindor is supported by Pair Eyewear. Y'all, I am so excited for our upcoming Through the Gryffin tour. It is going to be such a good time. But as ever, when you're going to be spending time in front of people, you want to be looking your darned best. And let me tell you what, Pair Eyewear has arrived just in the nick of time. Like, honestly, I was immediately blown away with my new frame. So let me walk you through exactly what they do. So starting at just $60, including your prescription, you can get your base frames, which are like sleek, modern, and stylish. But that is really just the start, because from there, you get to fully customize each frame, all of your looks, by simply snapping on the top frames. And they actually have an entire collection of Harry Potter frames. So like for the upcoming tour, I was so pumped, because I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to find some super cool Slytherin frames that I can like wear. But then as I was clicking around, I've been watching X-Men 97, which is like so good, and they actually had X-Men frames as well. And then May the 4th is coming up, or maybe by the time you're listening, it's already passed, but like they have a huge collection of over 20 Star Wars frames as well. So I had a very hard time narrowing, and I ended up getting two. I got the X-Men ones and I got some Slytherin ones. So many different like fandom frames you can choose from. And I never thought to accessorize my glasses with fandom stuff, but now you can. And it's so easy to change between them. Like they have little magnets on them, so you can just slap a different frame onto the front of your glasses and then easily switch it out. I've been doing it all day. It's so fun. And before you commit to anything, you can explore all the different possibilities with their virtual try-on. But again, the base frames for men, women, or kids. I think, honestly, kids would love this because you can just switch them out and they're so fun looking. They all start at $60. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code GRIFFIN for 15% off your first pair, and support the show by mentioning that Through the Gryffindor sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code GRIFFIN.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's see. There's also, okay, so when they get up, there's also this moment where the invisibility booster like falters for a second.
Yes.
Yes. Which to me is a little interesting because it ends up being a problem. Like because it falters, they get seen by some muggles and stuff. But it's like it falters for a second right when they start, but then works fine the rest of the trip.
Does it come back on, or is it that they get up into the clouds?
Well, I guess maybe there's that. But what my theory is that the invisibility booster, like blinking out on them, is Dobby running more interference.
Oh,
and he's like, oh no, they found another way. Wait, stop them.
Yes. You know what? That even tracks because yeah. Like, that's the thing I was just saying a couple pages ago. I'm like mentally giving like Arthur so much Weasley I'm giving Arthur so much credit for being able to like come up with this invisibility booster. And it's like, you know what? I have a feeling Arthur's magic wouldn't be faulty.
Yeah, exactly. So no, I don't think it is.
Yeah, because otherwise the car does a pretty darn good job through this entire process.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Although maybe circle back on that in a minute because I do have some more thoughts on the car. So that could be kind of a fascinating thought.
Okay, but so yeah, they get up in the air and then I don't know why I find this hard to believe, but they're able to like look down and just like see the Hogwarts Express.
Yes, like, I wrote a note about this exact same thing. I was like, I don't know why. I never really think of the train actually physically leaving the station, like because they're going, like this would suggest that like if you just had like an aerial, like you wouldn't have access to platform 9 3/4, but if you had an aerial view over King's Cross Station, you could still see the Scarlet steam engine leaving from what is otherwise like a brick wall or like a service tunnel or something, right? Like that, like, you know, it's like, wait a second, there's not supposed to be a train there. Like it's like in my mind it almost like exits to this magical, you know, like portal, right, to yeah. the, to the wizarding trail or yeah. track system.
Like my headcanon for this almost has to be that it sort of like follows like Dementor rules where it's like muggles just can't see it.
It or does seem
like Harry and Ron can see the tracks in the train because they're wizards, but like otherwise like a bright red steam engine leaving like the most, you know, heavily trafficked train station in Europe, like, would be noticed by the muggles.
It definitely seems so. Right? Yeah, like, I mean, especially because you're in the middle of London here, so, yeah. Like, the infrastructure for these tracks would be there. People, I mean, they wouldn't be like, ah, yes, the old tracks. Nobody knows where they go.
Right, like, it's super easy to figure out where train tracks go.
Exactly, because it's a straight line to the destination.
So
no, I agree with you. Like the fact that they're able to find it so quickly. But again, I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe it's like one of those things where it's like muggles just can't see it. So it's like they can, and it is otherwise very eye catching. But yeah, like a little bit of like Thestral or Dementor type behavior going on.
Right.
Yep. That being said, though, there is this like one line that I feel like demonstrates. It reminds me so much of us as high school age students, but they're basically in the air. They've successfully like made it through the challenging parts. They found the train and now they basically are just like on like a journey, an adventure. And Ron says, all we've got to do now is worry about airplanes. And they looked at each other and started to laugh for a long time. They couldn't stop. And this is just like friendship to me at its most pure.
Right.
Like this is like when you're getting into like trouble or you're getting into the shenanigans or whatever it is that you're doing. It's like that those like lighthearted high school age people who don't have like the rest of the world to worry about beyond.
Right.
And like for the most part, it's just like, we're having so much fun right now, aren't we? What an adventure.
Like, look what we're doing. Who would have thought?
Can you even believe it? Yeah. Look at us.
Look at us. Not me.
Not me.
Oh man. Yeah. Very, very fantastic. It always surprises. Like it says several uneventful hours later. I'm like, man, it is just so far to Hogwarts.
It is really far, yeah. Which is, I'm sure we talked about this in book one, but this is also one of those things where like, what about the students who just like live in Scotland?
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah. You know, like, cause it never talks about the Hogwarts Express, like stopping off at another train station to pick up more students.
It's like, if you live generally near Hogwarts, like too bad. You still have to make it all the way to London and then take the train basically past your house.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it does seem like there should be some other stations.
Yes,
or like,
it does.
What if you just lived in Hogsmeade or something? You know, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, because that's like must. the only wizard village.
Yeah. Suggests there's residents. And the fact that it's so close to the school, like, seems like some students would live there.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
And who knows? I mean, maybe there's like a piece to that and it's just never been relevant to any of the characters that we've known, or maybe the train is like stopping periodically and it just, I don't know, we've never been informed to it. The one line here though that we get though is the toffees that they had made them extremely thirsty and they had nothing to drink. I have no idea why, but it's almost like there's a part of my brain that has like experienced this exact sensation before, because every time I read that line, I'm just instantly so thirsty.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like, God, I want nothing more than a glass of water. And then I always think about how a glass of water seems like the worst thing to like satiate yourself from, like having eaten a whole bunch of toffee specifically. Like it doesn't seem like toffee and water.
It's not gonna help.
Yeah. No, you need like milk or something like with like a creaminess to it. Anyway, so I don't know why that sticks to me, but it does. And then they talk about the ice cold pumpkin juice from a trolley pushed by a plump witch. Oh man, that pumpkin juice. Now that sounds like would work.
Which is like weird because like it always sounds so good when I'm reading it in Harry Potter. But if you were just like, if I was just like at lunch and someone was like, you want some pumpkin juice? I'd be like, no.
Yeah, it's like, I went and took a pumpkin. I pulverized it a la orange juice. Now we have pumpkin juice.
Like that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Now pumpkin spice latte. Well,
no, that's a completely different story. Yeah. There you go.
Anyway. So they get to Hogwarts, and I always think it's like funny. It's always like almost not, I don't even know funny, like weirdly annoying to me that it's like the car makes it like 99.9% of the way there.
Yeah.
It's like, boy, it tuckered out at just the right moment for them to be at Hogwarts. Like, what if it had done this like just 5 minutes earlier? They'd be so far away.
No, but Jay, here's the thing. See, it says it right here. Not far, said Ron, more to the car than Harry. Not far now. And he patted the dashboard nervously. Are you not aware of the mechanical engineering reality that is telling your car that it can make it makes a difference?
Well, there's not nothing to that, I suppose. Like, maybe him telling the car is like the car being like, good, because I'm tired. Because, like, there is like a certain sentience to the car.
Yeah, that's exactly sort of what I was going for there. It's like, well, I mean, to be fair, back when I was in high school, I had this 1996 Isuzu Trooper, fully stock, which I basically took to like the end of the world and back.
Yeah.
But the number of times, and I called it Sue, the number of times that I would like talk to Sue going through some type of like mud crawl or like up the side of a canyon or something, it was sort of like, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this.
Yeah, come on.
It makes all the difference. And you know what? Sue always did it.
Always did it.
Yeah. Always came through for me. So that's always my thinking there. But I also, this is the other thing, is that I have a very deep curiosity as to what types of things are happening here, because the Ford Anglia started just as a Muggle automobile. It was then taken apart by Arthur and then, you know, put back together and magically enhanced, and then flown quite a distance by Ron and Harry to school. And at some point in this process, the car itself is becoming alive.
I know, right? Yeah, it's like that's pretty impressive magic that it basically becomes its own like sentient creature.
Yes, but then I'm like in my head I'm like almost like comparing it to objects like the Mirror of Erised or like the Elder Wand, which is like definitely like a sentient wand.
Like the wands do have a certain sentience. It reminds me of like broomsticks, honestly, where like Harry says like he felt like they were like horses that they could like tell if you're scared.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, I mean, they can also fly. So it's like, I wonder if there's something about like the freedom of flight that like frees the object's mind or something.
Yeah, that or even like some amount of like wizards like pouring like, I don't even know, like it sounds wrong to describe it as like part of their life force or something. That seems very like horcruxy. But like I almost wonder if as time goes on, this is almost something like where like all magical objects can sort of become like have like a life of their own, because it even seems like the suits of armor at Hogwarts are kind of in like a similar capacity, like where they can sort of come to life.
Like the portraits work is like, it's not just because you painted a picture of someone, now it has all those memories. Like the person who it's a portrait of can like coach that portrait to like be more like themselves.
Yeah.
So like, but to that end, if you just did have a painting that was magical and you didn't like do a ton of coaching for it, it seems like over time, the things it was exposed to could like inform its personality, because there is a lot of like a lot of the different things in the Wizarding World have like their own like person, like even the mirrors always are sort of like tuck your shirt and scruffy.
Yeah. It was just like, last chapter, I think.
Yeah. So it's like there. Yeah, I don't know. The car does seem to like take it the extra mile.
That's hilarious.
And become truly sentient.
Yes, indeed. Which will is obviously a huge plot point later on in the story, as it eventually will save our boys.
Oh, even then, another big thing happens here. Ron breaks his wand here, which like even the setup for this is so good, because it's like it seems so unthinkable to send Ron to a magic school where he's going to mostly be learning how to do stuff with his wand with a broken wand.
Yes.
But it's like it's a huge plot point, because eventually this is why Gilderoy Lockhart's like memory charm backfires, because it picks up Ron's wand. But like the reason it's not repaired is because Mrs. Weasley is so mad at him for stealing the car.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So this is another area like where you're exactly right. They've like woven the story together in such a way where it's like you're not feeling like, oh, you just set that up so that later on this could be relevant to that. You know, it's like, okay, so like the Ford was first used to save Harry from, you know, this particular instance, then it was used for this other instance, and then during that particular instance, the wand broke. And then because of the fact that they had taken the car from Ron's parents, that means that they were upset with him and unwilling to replace the wand, which means the wand continues to go like broken throughout the rest of the year, when otherwise maybe it would have been repaired. You know, it's like,
right.
It's like, man, it's like no one of these details specifically feels like it was fed into the story just simply to allow this other thing to happen.
Like it's all just very connected.
Yes. Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's like, again, it's like Ron wouldn't have broken his wand if Tom Riddle didn't open the chamber 50 years ago.
Right.
You know,
yes.
It's like it all comes back to Voldemort at the end of the day, which is just very sneaky. And then there's another just like fun tidbit about Ron's wand, about like how you learn in the first book that he has like a hand-me-down wand.
Yes.
And that it's like if you look up Ron's initial wand wood and core pairing, like on Wizarding World in the like Pottermore archives, you can just the description of the wood is like, yeah, especially if it has this particular core, it should not be transferred from one wizard to another because it won't work well.
Yes.
So not only does Ron have a broken wand, but even a fixed wand was not doing good magic. So Ron has had like a severe handicap for the first 2 years of his like wizarding schooling career.
Yeah, I think we even made a video once upon a time. It's like, why is Ron so bad at magic? And it's like, it's actually really not totally his fault.
Right. Like he's not bad at magic. He just unlocked the car.
Exactly. Yeah. Like just tapping around and such.
Right. Let's see. What else do we have here? You know, we already sort of talked about how we introduced the Willow like a book early, which is just really fun here. Bam, they crash into the Willow. It just beats them up terribly. I like the way it's described as the branches having like python, being described as thick as a python, because it's just sort of that like dangerous snake imagery.
That's true.
Like,
yeah.
Into play, which, you know, obviously there's a giant snake in the school when that's like the big villain.
Yep. Yep. Kind of so like laying some groundwork there, a little bit of like subliminal, you know, sort of like serpents, dangerous.
Right. Yes. Bad. Yeah. Don't like.
Can't smash. Mm-hmm. Then there's this other kind of interesting thing that I think happens, and I suspect that the reason, I mean, you could do it a couple of different ways from like a writing standpoint, but it does seem like for a beat, Harry is going to consistently miss the start of year feast.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're not really sure if it's like, was it just really difficult to write the Sorting Hat songs
that
in a way?
That is what I always think. Yeah.
That was sort of like meaningful, or like, is it difficult to just like, be like, and they went into the sorting ceremony and we met these new characters. And it's like, all of a sudden you got to like break off, you know, like rattle off like 40 new potential classmates and like where they went and all that type of thing.
Right. It's
kind of
like realistically Ginny's in Gryffindor, and that's about all you need to know.
Yeah. And Colin Creevy.
Colin Creevy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone else. Meh.
Right, yeah, not a big deal. We also, in that as well, they're looking through the windows. They're kind of like seeing the preparations for the sorting to happen, despite the fact that they're not in the Great Hall. We get a little bit of groundwork laid where Harry is recalling the fact that the Sorting Hat had like contemplated putting him in Slytherin.
Yep.
That ends up being a massive theme throughout the rest of this story.
Yes.
Is Harry sort of having that like that split feeling like, am I supposed to be? And like we'll get like the intro to like the Parseltongue, which sort of then is like, oh my gosh, like maybe I should be in
Slytherin, yes.
You know? So that, that kind of like in, like lingering self-doubt really perseveres throughout the rest of this story. We get the description of Lockhart's dress robes for the start of year feast, which
aquamarine.
Are
aquamarine.
Yes, aquamarine. Mm-hmm. Just a fun piece of trivia in case you're ever
trying to remember that. Right? I've already forgotten what color he was wearing at Flourish and Blotts, though.
Was it forget-me-not blue?
I think it was, yes. I think you're right.
Now I'm like, I desperately wait almost like, it's like I want to go back and like be absolutely certain, but
yeah. So while they're looking into the Great Hall, though, while you look that up, they are noticing that Snape's not at the table, and they're hoping it's because he's been fired or sacked or left. Which, you know, you get to be reminded that he wants the Defense Against the Dark Arts job, but it turns out he's out looking for them. Which I always think is like, it's like, why is Snape the one looking for them and not like McGonagall?
Yeah.
But I suppose it's because McGonagall is doing the sorting ceremony. Like that's like her job as well.
Yes.
So, and then I was like, okay, that actually makes sense. So maybe it wouldn't be McGonagall, but like, then why is it Snape? And it's like, because Dumbledore is extremely concerned that the chosen one didn't show up.
Yes.
And he's
like,
hey, where's my right hand man?
right. Yeah.
Snape.
Yeah. Snape. I got a mission
get in
for
here.
You. Although the way that this particular scene goes down, I mean, it is just sheer nightmare fuel to ever have somebody who you are saying something negative about overhear you saying the negative thing about you, especially if that person is in a position of power over you.
Yeah.
So total nightmare fuel that Ron basically has just finished saying, or maybe he's been sacked, said Ron enthusiastically.
Everyone hates him.
Or maybe. She had a very cold voice.
He must have noticed he hasn't got any friends.
Ron classic is so
Ron.
Bad.
I know.
It's like, Ron, just look around, man. Look around.
Take in your surroundings.
Yes, before you go talking about people, man. Or even better yet, just don't gossip. Just a good general rule
there
to life.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, this is like one of those situations. Once again, we kind of come back to the thing I've said before, which is that like this idea of expulsion is definitely being held over our heads. We discover that the boys were, of course, seen in the flying Fort Anglia, which is like one of those things where it's like, do they really catch the like make and model of the flying car? It's like,
oh, I know.
It's like, what is that? A flying Ford Anglia?
I know. Like, right? Like everyone's got it.
Right.
There's also this great line where it says, Ron gulped. This wasn't the first time Snape had given Harry the impression of being able to read minds.
Like,
which is immediately then like, you're like, oh, that'd be scary. But then it's like, your suspicions are immediately assuaged by the intro. He's like, I've got the evening prophet here. And you're like, oh, that's how we knew. But it's like, no, but he can read minds.
He can read minds.
Yes, almost certainly was.
That is definitely a thing that is also going on for certainly. Yep. But yep. I think Dumbledore can also do it.
Absolutely Dumbledore can do it. And I feel like actually the very next like 2 pages later it says for some reason Harry's talking about when Dumbledore is in there. It says for some reason he was unable to look Dumbledore in the eyes and spoke instead to his knees. And it's almost like Dumbledore is like desperately trying to make eye contact with Harry so he can get like the truth of the matter.
Yes.
Like, what actually happened? And Harry's like so distraught. He's like, I can't look Dumbledore in the eye. And it's like, if only he could have, then maybe Dumbledore would have gotten the full story through his mind.
I mean, he may be getting it anyway, because I mean, it says like, they told Dumbledore everything except that Mr. Weasley owned the bewitched car, making it sound as though he and Ron had happened upon a flying car outside of the station. He knew Dumbledore would see through this at once, but Dumbledore asked no questions about the car. And I mean, that could be Dumbledore like looking at Harry and being like, I know exactly what happened. Okay, continue.
Yeah. Like, okay, so here's, I have another little tiny mini theory here.
Okay, yep, go ahead.
Because like when Dumbledore comes in, he is like especially, he's like almost uncharacteristically like grave. Like Harry and Ron are threatened with expulsion like all the time or whatever. It's like looming over their heads, but it's rarely coming from Dumbledore. It's normally just like Harry and Ron worrying about it.
Yes.
But like it actually says, Dumbledore was looking unusually grave. And then the next page he says, if you do anything like this again, I will have no choice but to expel you. And it's just like, what? Well, first of all, empty threat. He would never.
Yeah. Harry, my boy.
but I think he is being intentionally scary here, and he's looking unusually grave because like I think why he really wants to know like the truth, what the truth of the matter is. Were you actually blocked? Did you like need to take the car or not? Because like, again, the reason he's hired Gilderoy Lockhart is to demonstrate to Harry very specifically the dangers of fame and like how not to be famous,
right?
Basically. And it's like, what Snape lays out, I think might be exactly what Dumbledore is worried about right here. It's like, oh, you wanted a fancy, like, exciting, famous arrival in a car. And it's like, oh. Dumbledore might be seeing, like, Harry Potter, do not you dare be letting that fame go to your head. If you do anything like this again, like, I have a stupid idiot here to teach you how not to do this, and you're already ahead of it.
Yes. You know? Oh, and it's so true. And I mean, and the honest fact too is that, like, Dumbledore, he could have that grave look on his face because he may even be aware, like, when they go back up to the common room 2 pages later, they're greeted, like, with applause. Oh, yes.
It is well received by everyone.
Yes, yeah. So it's, yeah. I mean, it really, oh, that's so true. Right. I really like that.
I think that's why Dumbledore is, like, actually upset, because he's like, this is what I was afraid of. Do not be like Lockhart.
Right.
Do not do it. You're already kind of showing signs of it. Like, you,
right.
Because he ended the year on such a high note. Like,
oh, I know. Yeah. Because that's the thing too. He would have come in so humble for his first year, but then he wins the House Cup for Gryffindor, like, to kind of close out the season. So it's sort of like, Harry, what happened to you over the summer? Like, did you let that get to you? Did you need to come in on some type of, like, glorious?
Yeah. Like, you know, are you trying to be all famous and showy now?
Right. Oh, yeah, man. He's like,
stomp that out. Right. I will expel you. I would never. But I will. Wink.
Like a flutter of a wink. Yeah. After that, though, there is kind of like an uncharacteristic piece of kindness, maybe, from Professor McGonagall, where basically it's like, Snape is like, well, if you were in my house, blah, 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 but it'll be up to Professor McGonagall to decide what these...
garbage, too. If they were in his house, he'd love it. He would love the idea that James Potter's son was in his house.
Yes, I know.
He'd be like, ha, 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 ha.
I got him. Yeah. I know. It would be... I feel like he'd be at war with himself all the time super excited. Yeah, yeah, he is. But the line that actually kind of gives me, like, a little bit of, like... And it always makes me happy, just because I also can't imagine anybody other than Maggie Smith, so I can just picture her doing this exact thing. But it's like, Professor McGonagall gave him a piercing look, but he was sure she had almost smiled. And this is, like, in reaction to, like, them making the argument to not take points off for Gryffindor because the term had not technically started yet. And I think that what is really funny about that is that it's like, I think Professor McGonagall appreciates the logic that's being applied.
Yeah.
It like fits her way of thinking so very well. It's like, you just gave me an out. You are absolutely correct. The term hasn't started yet.
I know. I think because, like, the last year, like, when she catches them out of bed, she's like, I would have thought Gryffindor house meant more to you than that, or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, they're just like, their immediate concern is like, please, no, not Gryffindor. Don't do it to Gryffindor.
Right.
It was our fault. Don't blame the rest of them.
Right.
And she's like, you do care about Gryffindor.
You do care. Yeah. You do care.
Yeah. Which is also in sharp contrast with, like, it's like right there, it's being established how much Harry is a Gryffindor, like, from the start as well.
Yes, also true.
Like, his concern about being a Slytherin later on.
Yep. But anyway, from there, I mean, they basically have, you know, sandwiches in the Snape's office.
Yeah, there's like a certain amount of, like, Gamp's Law happening here, where, like, Ron later on is like, my mother can make good food appear out of thin air, and it's like, isn't that sort of what McGonagall does? And it's like, it must not be.
I know. This is, like, one of those where I have to imagine that, because basically McGonagall summons a plate of sandwiches that, like, will instantly, like, refill itself as it's being consumed.
It feels like she must, like, connect it to the kitchens or something.
That's what I think as well. Yeah. And I suspect that within the walls of Hogwarts especially, this would work a lot better because, like, the infrastructure is almost, like, designed for it. There's like a place to draw from.
I wonder if every teacher's office just has, like, a place setting where they're just like, I'm hungry.
I know. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of, like, Bruno's plate from Encanto. Inside of the wall, where it's almost like, you know, it's like I got my little place setting, so like, my food can show up here too. It's all good. We're all good. Mm-hmm. From there, we make it up to the dormitory where they run into Hermione. We get the waddle bird.
I literally circled that and I was like, I will never remember this. Just one of those passwords. I'm like, waddle bird. If you say so.
What a throwaway. I'm pretty sure we got this question on Jay versus Ben in the past month, I had already forgotten it and was like, I'll try to remember waddle bird. I'll do my very best. So if you see me ever out in real life, be like, hey Ben, what's the password at the beginning of year two? And if I get it, we'll exchange high fives. It'll be great. This is one of those, though, where poor Hermione has absolutely been in the dark, where her two best friends did not show up on the train at all and were not at the feast, and then all of a sudden show up and they're pretty much like, you know what, I'm gonna go to bed, I'm pretty tired. And if I was Hermione, I would be like, what? Like, no, you are sitting down right now. You are explaining everything that just happened. There's rumors you were flying a car. It's like, Well, we were.
We're pretty awesome like that. Maybe you've noticed the party waiting for us inside.
Yeah.
No big deal. There is a quick shade thrown at Percy, who's, like, visibly mad at them for like, I guess arriving with the car, and he's like, oh, everyone else is happy for you, but not me. I don't, I'm angry. I'm definitely the bad guy of this book, but not really.
Once again, this is just like one of those where it's like, I know Percy's supposed to be the red herring for the whole book, and I just like, it couldn't be Percy.
I know. It's just like, nah.
I can't extend him that kind of credit, which is pretty hilarious. But anyway, that will round off a very fun and whimsical chapter five. I mean, a rather memorable and iconic chapter.
Lots of good setup happening in this chapter for sure.
Yes, indeed.
And then let's see. I do have a review here.
Okay, lay it on me.
Left for us by, it's just a series of emojis. So it's left for us by unicorn, dog, butterfly, rose, pig, panda, cat.
Hey, you know what? I'm pretty sure I know them.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. They just said, love it. Love the Super Comic Brothers YouTube channel. I was super excited to listen to the podcast. I love Harry Potter books and anything to do with the series. And listening to your theories and just what you think of everything is so interesting. It makes me think of the books in a whole new way. So thank you for making your videos on this incredible podcast. My question is, why does Dumbledore and Voldemort trust Snape? I mean, both of them knows that one of them is going to get screwed, right? I think you hit the nail on the head. It's just like, yep, both of them is positive that one of them is going to get screwed, and both of them is positive that it's the other one.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. No, I think that is exactly it. And I think that really this is like the thing that Dumbledore, the ace in the hole that he has on his side, is love.
His
and
love.
It is the primary thing that Voldemort cannot understand.
Yes.
And I think like in this way, it gives Dumbledore an edge over Voldemort in terms of this trust, because Dumbledore knows something about Snape to be absolutely true,
right,
and verified. And like, I think that this is why, like, I suspect that Dumbledore had his worries.
Yeah.
You know,
well, like, I think he does. And it's like, this is like the thing he has to go back to and lean on, because he's like, the reason I trust Snape is because of love. So if I can't trust Snape, then I can't trust my entire cause.
Yes.
Because like, that is what it's built on. And if that's not true, then I'm doomed to lose.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think on some level, when you reach high enough stakes, you have to invest your efforts, your energy, your belief, not only in the facts that you know, but also in the foundation of your principles. And
yes,
I think that that's probably where, on some level, both of them reside.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I think so.
So there you
go.
So
great question. There's your answer. But otherwise, we'll be looking forward to chapter six, Gilderoy Lockhart, which has humorously off chapter art, which we'll talk about when we get to it.
Yes.
But I love that. Anyway, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
There we go.
But otherwise, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.